Hi, my name is Mike, and I'm one of the ministers here at the church. I'd like to start by thanking you for listening to this sermon online. Before we get started, I'd just like to say that we truly hope that this audio recording will encourage you in your walk with God. But we also hope that it would just be supplemental to your relationship with Jesus, and that it would in no way replace the church that you should be plugged into or the spiritual leaders God has put in your life to shepherd you. So please, enjoy the next 30 minutes or so of this message. I pray it will challenge and uplift you wherever you are in your spiritual journey. God bless.
Good morning. So, I see about half of the people here know me, which in general terms, that's better than we usually get, about half. So, for those of you who don't know me, my name is Ralph. My wife, Twyla, is sitting at the back there. Thank you. I wasn't watching the slides. We are missionaries in Tanzania. We work with the church, but we work together with the church to do rainwater collection and to do some other things in the community. Because we're trying to follow the model that Christ set down for us. In the book of Matthew, over and over, we read a statement that Christ went about healing and teaching and preaching and or proclaiming the kingdom. And I'm not very good at healing, but I can do other things within the community that meet the needs of the community. And so can Twyla. And so what we did originally, we went in looking for felt needs in that community and then looking for ways that we could meet those needs as a foot in the door into the community, as a way of demonstrating God's love to the community. And then, together with the members of the church there, we build relationships and we teach the other people around us about the love of God. That's essentially what we do. I don't want, my presentation is largely about my work. We live in a very segregated society. Men do men things, women do women things. They don't do things together very much. And so Twyla has almost a completely separate ministry among the women. And if you look on the back table, she has a display of jewelry and other things that the ladies in Monduli Jew have made and would like to sell. And so if you feel that you'd like to buy something, that will go to the lady. Each of those pieces has a tag on it that gives us the lady's name who made that piece, and she will receive money if you buy it. That's how that works back there. So where do we live? We're in a village called Emareti on the Monduli Mountains over here, about 160 kilometers west of Mount Kilimanjaro. Kilimanjaro is the highest mountain in Africa. It's on the border between Kenya and Tanzania. And it is, if you're interested, it's a fairly easy climb. People come, we were hearing that somebody in their 80s climbed Kilimanjaro not long ago. It's not ropes and climbing up rock faces and stuff. There's paths all the way to the top. The city of Arusha is the large city near us. It's the capital of our district of Tanzania, or province of Tanzania. It's a city of about 2.5 million people, so considerably larger than Saskatoon or Regina. Or even Memphis, where we lived before we went to Tanzania. But if we need to do any serious shopping, we go up to Nairobi in Kenya, because Arusha for all the number of people that are there, is still a pretty small town. And we have a small village, Monduli. Our friends who persuaded us to move to Tanzania were working with a Christian clinic and school in on the edge of Monduli, but we wanted to live among the Maasai people. And so we're on top of the mountain, in a village on top of the mountain, in the Monduli Mountains. This is our village. Our house is hidden by the trees. It's up here. There's Twyla walking the dog. This is market day. A few features that you probably won't recognize. These are stores of various sorts, as you can probably tell. Right here is a gas station. Somebody has a 5-gallon can of gas, and they sell it 1 liter at a time. Because it takes about a liter to keep a motorcycle going for a few kilometers. And the guys who drive motorcycle taxis fill up there. The other common means, the not of riding, but of transportation for water and goods, are these donkeys that are all over the place. And you'll see these donkeys with packs with jugs of water or bags of maize or things like that coming and going from the market. The church that we attend would be off out of the picture to the left. So here are the Maasai people, the women dancing on one side, the men dancing on the other. This is a typical celebration. I don't know exactly what celebration we got the pictures from, but this is the picture you'll see in National Geographic and in on the media, because when the men dance, they take turns jumping as high as they can. And sometimes their whole upper body is higher than the heads of the guys around them. They'll jump 3 or 4 times, and then those 2 step out, and another 2 step in, and they keep doing that. And here are the ladies dancing, and they've those wide collars that they wear. Do you have one back there? No. Those wide collars that they wear are built in such a way that when they shrug their shoulders, the collar bounces. And that's a big part of their dancing. So the Maasai in the dry season really struggle to get water. I want you to notice the long line of people and cows coming. This spot normally has water at the surface. This is a spring where they can normally get water without any difficulty. I want you to see how far down they've dug to get water. Paolo told me he waited all day in line to get water for his cows and our cow at that spot. That was the only place where you can get water. Many cows and other animals die. Also, the old people and young people die because of lack of water. We do rainwater collection in these communities. We do rainwater collection because rain happens every year. Even in a dry year, you get some rain. If you drill wells, you can sometimes get water, but not always. So wells, particularly when you live on top of a volcano, and all of the mountains in our area are volcanoes. When you live on top of a volcano, you know, the slope is like this. And when water falls on that, water ends up, 10 miles away, down at the bottom of the mountain, not up here where we are. And if some gets trapped in the ground, and there are places where it gets trapped in the ground, it's polluted by the chemicals from the volcano, particularly. We have a very high level of fluoride in our area. So all of the people who live there have brown teeth. Not because they don't keep their teeth clean, but because they have fluoridosis. They're gradually being poisoned by too much fluoride. A little bit of fluoride, the dentists tell us, is good for our teeth. A lot of fluoride is not good for our teeth or our bones. And so rainwater, which is fairly predictable, is clean, doesn't have fluoride, it's the safest and best solution for our area. So for rainwater collection, you have to have a roof to collect rainwater from. You have to put gutters around that roof. You have to put a first flush system on that to make sure you get clean water. Now, most people don't know what a first flush system is. And so here's a picture of a first flush system right here. The water comes off of the roof. When it hasn't been raining for a while, what do you have on your roof? Bird poop, dirt, leaves, lizards, bugs. Do you want that in your drinking water? Not really. And so we want to wash the roof before we get drinking water off of it. And so what this thing does is the water coming off of the roof and out of the gutter comes straight down this pipe, which is capped on the bottom. And it gradually fills up. After about 15 or 20 minutes, it fills up to this point. You can't see it, but there's a T there. And when it fills up to the T, then the water runs off into the tank. So for 15 or 20 minutes, it rains and it washes the roof off and it gets the bird poop and the dirt and the leaves and the lizards. Now, some of those things float, don't they? And so in the top of the tank, you won't see it in any of these tanks, but you'll see it in others later, we have a plastic basin with a screen and rocks to hold the screen down. And so the water comes in and pours through that screen into the tank, and anything that floats, like leaves or lizards, stays there. It doesn't go down into our drinking water. And so at our house, which is completely supplied by rainwater, with tanks that have been sitting there since 2016, you can open the tanks and look in and see the bottom of the tank, and it looks like maybe you can write your initials in the dust on the bottom. But we don't get a buildup of dirt in the bottom of our tanks because the water that goes in is really quite clean. This is the system that we put on our church building. You can see the guys putting a roof over the tanks. So we got more roof and more water for those tanks. We designed the system based on the size of the church building. After we put the roof on there, I think we could add another 6 tanks to that system. We don't need it right now, but we probably could add tanks to that system. The other important part, I didn't finish with my list here. We have to have storage. That's the most expensive part of our project, buying tanks. Those tanks there cost about $500 a piece. Together with, if you count the plumbing and all of that, they cost about $500 a piece. The larger tanks that we use on some of our bigger projects cost about $1,000 a piece. So if I'm talking about a system with 20 tanks on it, we're talking $20,000. Just for starters. Actually, that's just the cost of the tanks. It's not the cost of the rest of the thing. So it's about $40,000 if you've got 20 tanks. Anyway, we use volunteer labor, not just because we're cheap. Those of you who know me, I'm guilty, I'm cheap. But there's a method behind our madness. We go into a community and we say, we will give you a rainwater collection system, but you have to provide the labor. We will bring the materials. We will bring the know-how. Your people have to come and do the work because we want the people in this community to know how this is built. We want the people in this community to know why we're doing it this way, why we have a first flush, why we take water from the bottom of the tanks and not dipping from the top, etc. And so we're training the people in the community to become experts in providing their own water from their own roofs. So when we go in, the first thing we do is we have to create a level spot for the tanks. We're building a tank farm. All of the tanks have to be this level with each other. Otherwise, you've got a tank up here that's half full and a tank down here that's overflowing. Right? They all have to be the same level. And so this is often the most time-consuming part of the job. This particular project, it took 6 weeks to get to this point here where we had dug out the whole spot. The ground there is as hard as this when it's dry. You dig with picks and with gembes, which is this thing that they're swinging here. It's like a hoe, but it's not. It's heavier, and they chop into the ground and drag the dirt into a pile that's then shoveled into a wheelbarrow and hauled off. So after we've got the ground level, we dig our trenches. If we're doing underground lines, then this particular project, we did an underground line from the next building, which was bigger and had straight walls, easy to put gutters on. That is called wet conveyance if it's underground. Dry conveyance is over top. It drains itself all the time. We install gutter and downspouts. Uncle Harold, you probably recognize the A-frame. No, we didn't use A-frame structure there. We usually use an A-frame scaffold, which everybody thinks we're insane using. They look at that and say, that'll never stand, but that's what I learned from Grandpa Orr. We install the gutters and downspouts. Here we're putting in the underground line, and this is a first flush being installed and plugged into the underground line. So the water, this would fill up here, and it would get up to a T and then drain down into that underground line, which then goes to the tanks. Here we are putting in 10,000-liter tanks. You see the size of those tanks. It's a bit clumsy handling them. We surprised everybody because we took some short pieces of pipe and rolled the tanks on the short pieces of pipe, and they'd never seen that done before, and they thought that was quite interesting. But you see, from getting the tanks off of the truck, that's the process that's happening here, drilling big holes in the tops of the tank, small holes in the bottom of the tank, installing the pipes. We get them hooked together. Here they are with a valve at the bottom of each tank, getting another tank in place. Here's the line almost complete, and the line coming from the other building up into the top of the tank and then down to the bottom of the tank, and the water flows upward into that tank so it doesn't disturb any dirt that might have collected any sediment on the bottom of the tank. That's a really quick process. We put in 14 tanks in 2 days. And here we are putting the plumbing on the bottom, attaching the outlet pipes. So each tank gets two valves and a union between the valves. What this means is that if we get a damaged tank that's leaking, we can shut that tank off. We don't have to shut off the whole system. If we get a dirty tank, we can shut that tank off and drain it. We don't have to drain the whole system. We can remove a tank here and clean it out or repair it or replace it, and the rest of the system still holds water. Here we are hooking the line from our tanks up to the already existing water lines into the clinic. This is a clinic project that we're looking at pictures of. So the water goes underground, but we also built outdoor spigots for the ladies to come and get water for their home. So this project provides more water than the clinic needed, and ladies can come and get water from here. And then we're doing finishing touches. We drill a tiny hole in the bottom of the first flush. A first flush has to be drained after every rain. Get rid of the dirty water, so the next time it rains, you wash the roof again. But in case somebody forgets to drain it, we drill a hole there, and it'll drain itself gradually. We also put a screen in the downspout to make sure that those leaves and lizards don't get into the system. Loseku painting tanks and pipes to protect them from the sun. We label the tanks. This one says, don't step on the pipe. And that one says January, February, March, April, because we budget the water. You can have one tank per month. Because this is a 14-tank system, we've got two tanks that are labeled just for the clinic, reserved for the clinic. In a very dry year, they've got two tanks that are reserved. The clinic will still have water. And there's the Kishimoy putting valves on the outdoor spigots that we built. And with running water, then we have a celebration. We have singing and dancing, and we have gifts. That's me receiving. We have a sample at the back of Rungu, which is a symbol of authority in the Maasai community. A person who carries the Rungu is an Oleguanani. Oleguanani translates basically to elder or judge or arbiter. And I carry that when I go to important community events. The Rotary Club provided part of the money for that project, so this is the president of the local Rotary Club. This is our preacher, Koimeri, because all of the instructors on that project were members of our church, instructing other members of the community how to do that project. So we have a big celebration. That's the last part of the project. So here's the church where we're building that system. And you see the various phases. These two guys come from a church in Alabama near Huntsville that provided the money for that particular system to be built. And they came over to help us build it. Here's the Emirati Dispensary project that we did next with our 14 10,000-liter tanks. Coming with water coming from, not from this building, but from the village hall next door. And these are members of the church that were the leaders in that project, and we gave them each a goat for their volunteer efforts because they took time off from their normal work to work on this. There's the ladies celebrating. The next project, when we finished the clinic, I said to them, where should we go next? And they said, we need to go to Irmarijo Primary School. And we went to Irmarijo Primary School. I'll show you that picture next. We have, the reason I've got that one separated is because we have another project at Irmarijo. This is the next one. After Irmarijo, we did Elawai. Elawai, we went this direction the first time, we went this direction the second time. So about 5 to 7 kilometers away from our village, these two primary schools that have no supply of water, we've now supplied enough water that their kitchen will have water, clean water. Their children can drink clean water. They can wash their hands with clean water. It was in this community, in Eloi, that I got my first indication of how important clean water is. I was helping with a funeral, and I do that a lot. I'm not a funeral director or anything like that, but I have a four-wheel drive Land Cruiser, and we can put a coffin on top of the car, and I can drive nearly anywhere in the mountains. And we went to an area near this school where they have The older people tell me no one has ever driven there with a car before. And we got to a point where I couldn't drive with the car anymore. The Maasai actually got out earlier and they said, you drive up there, we'll watch. We'll meet you there. And when I quit, the guys with the dirt bikes quit just a little bit beyond me and they walked. That's how steep it was and how slippery it was. And we carried the coffin the rest of the way in. So we're sitting around after the funeral. There's always a feast. And somebody came around with what I thought was a pail of tea, serving tea. And having grown up among the Cree people here, I'm used to sitting around in a circle and drinking, somebody bringing tea around. And I realized as I watched, I'm looking for my cup. I didn't get a cup. And then I realized that these people are coming around with a pail of water, but they're not dipping out tea. They're pouring it out for people to wash their hands. It looks like milky tea. It's muddy water. Okay? That's what we're washing our hands with. Well, after we washed our hands, we got tea. And then we got pilau, a rice pilaf. And it was all made with the same water. That water that looked like milky tea. And that told me right there, this was the best water they had for washing hands or making tea or pilau. That if we can provide clean water in that community, they don't have to use that muddy stuff. And that was a real eye-opening for me. Anyway, this system has 7,500 liter tanks, so 75,000 liters altogether, 10 tanks. And we're just putting the fence around it. Again, we've got an underground conveyance from one side of the building, but we've got overhead conveyance into the tanks. And there, right there, you can see the filter basin where the water goes into the tank through the filter. You can see the first flush on every downspout, and you can't quite see the elbow down at the bottom with the cap, but that's you can believe it's there. Anyway, so the Elway was our most recent project. Imarijo is a two-phase project. So we did that one last year. We did first the dispensary and then Imarijo. This year we've done Elway. And we're looking forward to a larger system. We did a small system here for Imarijo. This green area shows this spot right here where we're going to put 21 10,000 liter tanks off of these big buildings at the top of the hill. We've already, on the other side of the campus, at the lower end of the campus, we already did a small system. But what's coming up is a larger system here that we're going to do. And we already have the funding in place for that. We're just in the approval processes for a grant. And then they're building a new school building, the school campus. And we measured that up just before we left. This is actually closer to our house. We could walk here without too much effort. It's about 3 kilometers from our house. And it's in an area where you could put in a well, but where people have put in the wells silt in very quickly. And so and they still get the water with too much fluoride. And so we've measured this up and we've started a proposal for a grant to put 30 tanks on this property. And potentially a totally separate system for flush toilets on this property. And that's going to be really unique. We've never had one with flush toilets before. And then before we left, we also measured up this property, a rehab hospital down in the village, Monduli Village, down below us. Again, we're looking at about 30 tanks to go onto this property. We'll do it in separate chunks. We'll do these three buildings together with about 8 tanks, these two buildings with about three or four tanks, this cluster of buildings to some tanks down here, this cluster of buildings to more tanks down here, and then this cluster to a set of tanks down below them. But that's a hospital that doesn't have enough water, doesn't have clean water. They're on the city system, but they don't get enough water to provide their hospital. And Father Faustin asked me if we would consult on that. He's in the process of trying to raise the money for that. But that's another project that we're looking forward to doing. And then the big project we're hoping to do sometime is the campus at the Monduli Teachers College. This would probably be about six different small projects, each about $60,000. And we would provide that. Again, they've got a campus with 1,000 students and not enough water. And we would provide water for that campus. But more importantly, the teachers and the students on that campus will learn how to do rainwater collection so they can go out and do that on the rural school campuses where they will be teaching. That's the important part. The other seriously important part is that this is our foot in the door to the whole North Tanzania community to teach the gospel. Because now we're friends with everybody there because we're going in and working with those teachers to do rainwater collection. So, the last part of this is, how do you get a hold of us? Because we're in Tanzania most of the time. We're a little hard to call. Most people don't know how to dial international numbers. I'm sure some of you do. But it's expensive. It's actually cheaper for us to call here than for people here to call there. I can make a 20-minute phone call for 1,000 shillings, which is about 50 cents. It's cheap. Where if you did a 20-minute phone call from this end, it would cost you several dollars per minute. Anyway, the way to reach us, my email, Twyla's email. On Facebook, I do a lot of personal posts on my own Facebook page, but we keep Williams Tanzania Mission for mission-related stuff. We talk about what's going on with our projects, and we put pictures up and things like that. So if you follow that, you'll see what we're doing currently on any of our projects. The other thing is, if you will send me an email at ralphwwilliams@gmail.com, I can add you to our mailing list if you're not already on it. I know some people here are. And roughly every month, I send out a report about what's going on in our lives and what's going on with our work. And we can keep you up to date that way as well. Am I out of time? Have we still got time? How are we doing? Couple minutes. Okay. You know, I was a university teacher for several years, but I'm better at answering questions than I am at standing up here and talking. So do you have any questions for me?
What about security for the tanks? People open
them. That does happen, as a matter of fact. Our biggest problem, actually, was one of the members of our church. He's a really nice guy, but he's schizophrenic. He goes off his medication, and he does ugly things. And he destroyed the pipes on our system and drained our system and threw dirt in our system. And so we had to clean it all out, and we had to get money for him to go back to the hospital to get on his medication. We put a fence around the tanks mostly to keep animals out, because we're in a community where we've got cows and goats and sheep wandering all over the place, or donkeys. If a donkey or a cow steps on one of those pipes, it'll drain the system. And so we put a fence around them to keep them safe, and also to keep guys like Lazaro out. That's not a big problem, really. We saw one other system that had been vandalized. It looked like some 14-year-old was seeing how strong he was, and he chopped a hole in one tank. We've never had that happen with ours, but it does happen. So we put a fence around to keep him safe. And it was entertaining. We put the fence around, and the kids climb over the fence because it's nice and cool in there. But they don't damage anything, so I don't know. We have two rainy seasons in an average year, okay? In a normal year, it starts raining March 1st and it finishes raining on May 30th. So 3 months. We get daily rain during that period. Not rain all the time, but it'll rain and then it'll be dry the rest of the day. But you get an inch, half an inch, 2 inches. Sometimes, usually once or twice during the rainy season, we'll get a deluge, just 5 inches in 1 hour, sort of thing, and water runs off everywhere. People drown, houses wash away. It gets really ugly, but normally we don't get that much rain. Then it's dry for 6 months. It doesn't rain again until after Halloween, and that's the hot time of the year. So it's hot and dry for 6 months. And then sometime between Halloween and Christmas, we'll get about 6 weeks of rain. And then again, from Christmas until March 1st, no rain. So that's our typical year. Now, has anyone ever seen a typical year? Nope. Okay, so while we have lived there, 1 year we didn't get the fall rainy season at all, the short rainy season, didn't happen at all. That same cycle, the next spring, we had cyclones in the South Indian Sea, and it pulled all the moisture to the south. And so our rainy season, instead of starting on March 1st, didn't start until the middle of April, and it still ended at the end of May. So we only got 6 weeks of rain instead of 3 months. And that was a really dry year. We're actually quite fortunate. We're on the southern edge of a huge drought and famine. For the last 5 years, Kenya and Ethiopia, the whole Horn of Africa, and we're on the south edge of that area, the whole Horn of Africa has had less than normal rainfall every year for the last 5 years. This year we might be turning the corner because our rainy season this year was pretty good, but we don't know. This sort of thing you look back at and say, oh, that happened. So the good news is that where we have systems in place and where we budget the water, we've never run dry. Like in our house, we keep 2 years of water on hand all the time, even with sharing with the neighbors. El Nino and La Nina both figure into this. And El Nino typically causes it to be hotter and drier, and La Nina causes it to be wetter. So we've had two El Nino years in a row. That makes it drier. Darn, yes. One more question. We buy them in Arusha. There's a plumbing shop that we've found one plumbing shop that is a very good supplier. There's a bunch of plumbing shops, but these guys are very good, and they will deliver to our village for free. Now, often we have to pay extra, like for Eloi, where there's no road going in there, we paid the trucker extra to drive from our village into Eloi. But he went, and he delivered the tanks. The tanks are manufactured in Arusha. So we try not to have anything on the project that isn't locally available. Now, that said, there's certain parts, like the valves that we use come from Italy, but you can buy them in any shop. So, but we really focus. There's a lot of things we could do if we imported other stuff, but that's not sustainable. So, you ready for takeover? Thank you.